On Monday, we continue our Closing the Gap series focused on early childhood education. We talked to two community organizations about their efforts to connect low-income families to quality early childhood education and other resources that can strengthen the family. Tune in Monday for that conversation. Up next, we talk to the author of a new biography of Chicago's first Black banker, Jesse Binga. That's just ahead on Reset from 91.5 WBEZ. But first, here's Becky Vivi with an update on the weather and more.
Thanks, Jen. It's about 34 degrees, warming up today, high near 44. Going into the weekend, looks like we're going to get up to a high of 50 on Sunday. This is WBEZ.
I'm Ira Flatow. On the next Science Friday, we gaze into the not-so-distant future to examine emerging technologies just waiting to go mainstream, like tiny meta lenses, flat chips that act like curved glass, or smarter targeted fertilizers. How about the energy grid of the future, powered by batteries? It's all on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Science Friday, today at 1 on WBEZ Chicago.
WBEZ is supported by Ford Windows and Remodeling with Marvin, dedicated to undertaking and completing residential and commercial window replacement projects throughout the winter. More at FordWindowsAndRemodeling.com. And by court-appointed special advocates for children of Illinois, community-based programs supporting volunteers who work for the best interests of abused and neglected children in Illinois. Volunteer opportunities at IllinoisCASA.org. It's 34 degrees. This is WBEZ.
This is Reset. I'm Jen White. Binga Bank was the very first Black-owned bank in Chicago. Jesse Binga, founder of the bank, built his wealth as a real estate broker. He leveraged that wealth and his growing influence to found Binga Bank in 1908. At the height of his success, Binga stood as an example of hope for Black people living in segregated Chicago, but he also faced discrimination and racist attacks. Eventually, after a series of financial reversals, he lost his wealth and his bank. A new biography, Binga, The Rise and Fall of Chicago's First Black Banker, tells his story. And the author, Don Hayner, joins us now. He's the former editor-in-chief of the Chicago Sun-Times and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. Don, welcome to Reset.
Thanks very much.
How did you get interested in this story?
You know, it started on a, it was an anniversary story of the city of Chicago's incorporation in the late 80s, 1980s. And I was trying to find the oldest Black family I could find in Chicago and the oldest white family. And the oldest Black family came here in 1849, a guy named George Meade. And through marriage, there was a Binga connection. And then I ran across the story of Jesse Binga, who I'd never heard of, and I was intrigued, fascinated, in fact.
What intrigued you about his story?
Well, you know, it was just, not to be too cliche, but up from, you know, pull yourself up by the bootstraps kind of story, but also his fearlessness. He was a guy who was his own man and cut his own path in Chicago under very trying circumstances because the Black Belt, as it was called then, was basically fenced in by discriminatory policies, not policies, but attitudes. And from it also, Binga was subjected to bombings, and his home was bombed 6 times. His business was bombed 2x after he'd moved into a white neighborhood.
Now, at the height of his success in the early 20th century, he was a millionaire. But just give us an idea of the wealth he was able to build. Put it into context for us.
Well, he started in real estate, and he started, like even a lot of immigrants would, renting out space in his own room. And then he would leased a house and later bought it, and he would lease out space there. But it was largely for workers coming to the stockyards, coming up from the south and filling in the stockyards in the summer, and then later sometimes breaking strikes. You know, that was going on at the meatpacking with the meatpackers. But I think around 1908, when he did the bank, he had about 2,000 tenants. So he grew a very big real estate business through buying and leasing property and then turning it over.
Now, he was very influential in Chicago in business circles, specifically Black business circles. Talk about the kind of influence he wielded.
Well, because of the situation for Blacks in Chicago at that time, you know, you couldn't do much outside the Black Belt. You were contained.
And just kind of give us those parameters and explain exactly what that was.
Yeah, the Black Belt was probably around 22nd Street to 37th Street at the beginning. And it was a very thin strip of land that whites contained Blacks in at that time. And if blacks tried to move out. It was becoming very overcrowded, particularly when the Great Migration came, started in 1915. It became very overcrowded, and this small sliver of land became bulging with people, and there needed a place to go. And by 1919, when the race riots came, it was kind of an explosion of this frustration, I think, that was going on by the hemmed-in aspect of what was going on for blacks in Chicago. And there were other riots across the country, but Chicago was kind of unique in that blacks fought back. Mm-hmm. And that was something that Binga had always done, too. Binga was a model for that. He was outspoken. He was bold. As W.E.B. Du Bois said, he wouldn't kowtow to white men or bend his neck to white men. And so he was a kind of a standard bearer for a lot of people in the Black Belt.
And how did he help grow the Black Belt and really expand the business community there?
Well, he slowly moved black people into white neighborhoods. But one critical moment happened in 1910 when he bought at least a whole block from a white meat packer. And it was 47th and State to 48th and State. And that was a huge expansion right down State Street, which is where the Black Belt grew mostly. And eventually the Black Belt became known as 22nd Street to 95th Street.
Now, Binga was born in Detroit.
Yes.
His family had strong entrepreneurial roots there. What were you able to learn about his family and his background?
Well, he had kind of an interesting family, particularly his mom was very eccentric. She not only did real estate, but she also traded whitefish, from the north, from the Great Lakes, and got sweet potatoes from the south, and was doing that kind of commerce. But she also would mix concoctions of elixirs that were cure-alls, as were popular at the time. So she had a lot of things going on. And the dad was a barber, and he had a barbershop in Cadillac Square in Detroit, and he was also very successful. So
he had this model of entrepreneurship in his life that he watched. What brought him to Chicago?
Well, he was working as a Pullman porter and was all across the West. And eventually, he just wanted a place to grow his own business, and Chicago was going to be that place. And he came to Chicago for the 1893 World's Fair and ended up being a street peddler, which was a tough business. There were 30,000 street peddlers in Chicago at the time. But he chose probably a key perfect place, which was a brand new railroad station, the Illinois Central. And it was perfect because it would have longevity even after the World's Fair. But then a depression came, and that made even the life of peddlers tough.
Well, it's interesting because in reading the book, you piece together this very methodical approach he had to building his wealth, being a peddler and just sort of building up step by step by step. What were some of those key moments for him that led him to being Chicago's first black banker?
Yeah, well, I think, you start with just the sheer will he had. He was going to succeed. That was what Binga was all about. But he used the money from the real estate to eventually do street loans. And I don't know, Dempsey Travis, an old businessman now deceased from Chicago, told me one time that he would basically act like a pawn shop for rings and collateral of rings and watches and that kind of thing. And then eventually he just opened his own bank in 1908, and it was a private bank. And there were other private banks at the time, but none in the Black Belt. And so he was the first, and then was the first state chartered bank in the Black Belt also. But the money from the real estate went hand in hand with his banking situation. He would lease the property or sell the property, get the mortgage at his bank, and then also sell insurance, and you would have your savings account there. It was a one-stop shopping. But this was a part of the self-sufficiency of the Black Belt because they had no choice. So they had to be able to do all their business within the confines of the Black Belt. And so it was the so-called double duty dollar. Help the race at the same time you help yourself.
That's former editor-in-chief of the Chicago Sun-Times and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Don Hayner. We're talking about his new biography, Binga, The Rise and Fall of Chicago's First Black Banker. It's available now. It would have been relatively simple for him to take his wealth and leave Chicago, especially since he became a target for racist attacks. What did you learn about what motivated him to stay here and keep pushing up against these boundaries where race and economic development clashed?
Well, this was really the place that he cut his path on. And I don't know if he would have been able to do that in another city immediately. I mean, he'd already been here. By the time he had the bank, he'd been here about 15 years. So he had a pattern going, and that pattern was very successful for him. And everybody in the black belt knew him. Everybody trusted him. A lot of white financiers trusted him. His name was gold. And then, of course, in the Depression, things changed. But just if I could just correct you on one thing, I'm not a Pulitzer Prize winner, but the staff was.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Okay. Just
one journalist to his heart. Got to be accurate.
A couple of our reporters, yeah.
Well, when he opened the bank in 1908, as you said, this was the first black bank in Chicago. Just explain the significance of that moment.
Well, blacks could and were depositors at banks downtown, mm-hmm. and banks outside their neighborhood, but they weren't getting mortgages. And so Binga saw this. I mean, it's like any good entrepreneur. He sees the opportunity and he seizes it. So as he was growing his real estate firm, he saw that there was a need for mortgages and a place to keep money, and Binga became that place. And it was not only just black depositors. He had white depositors too, particularly those who were doing business in the black belt.
Now, he had very specific ideas and views about not just black wealth and how to build it, but about black respectability.
Right.
Explain what you learned about that.
Well, he, you know, when the migration was going on and a lot of people were coming to Chicago, there was almost an attitude among the black elites that we have to make sure everybody who's coming here knows how to act. And it was a little condescending. And I think some people in the migration felt that way, too. But Binga just was basically had this message of do for self, be self-sufficient, save your money, don't spend it on things like policy or the sporting life or in the vice area, which was kind of connected to the black belt out of necessity. Not a necessity, I guess, but it was forced on the black belt by what was going on in the city. But so Binga was always about the message of self-sufficiency and own your own home, and so you can control your own life. And that freedom came largely from financial freedom.
Well, he was also a devout Catholic.
Yeah.
How did his faith play a role in his story?
Well, you know, he was very big on supporting Catholic education for black kids in the Black Belt. And also he supported college scholarships and did all that kind of thing. But his faith was such that was his center and that was his home. He wasn't a drinker or a smoker or a gambler. He was a man who oftentimes found pleasure at the church, and one of his favorite things to do was to cook communion meals for First Communions. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he was all about being a model, I think, for people, and I think people accepted that.
But ultimately, this is a tragic story. He lost his wealth. He lost his bank. What were some of those key things that led to his fall? And you mentioned the Depression as one of those things.
Well, as the Depression was coming, the bank was struggling, and he knew it. And he was trying everything he could to get the bank to a better balance sheet. And so he was going to set up a new bank. And in that way, he might have been able to clean the old bank's assets up by shifting it off to the new bank. But while this was happening, the bank's finances became very tenuous, and he had to seek outside help. He couldn't get it. And the bank closed, and he was later charged and convicted of embezzlement.
What do you hope we learn from this story, from remembering Jesse Binga?
I think we got to remember our history is not something we can be too proud of. And we have to remember that the remnants of all this are still with us in Chicago, and we have to. It's an everyday thing. So I think that's something that we all should keep in mind.
That's a fascinating read. It's former editor-in-chief of the Chicago Sun-Times, Don Hayner. His new biography, Binga, The Rise and Fall of Chicago's First Black Banker. It's available now. Don, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.